How long, O Lord, must I call for help? But you do not listen. Violence is everywhere. I cry, but you do not come to save. Welcome, everyone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Our host is author, teacher, and itinerant speaker, Kenneth Wong. How long, O Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen? Violence is everywhere. I cry, but you do not come to save. Sound familiar? So what do you do with God's apparent silence? Oswald Chambers once said, at the beginning of our life with Jesus Christ, it was a delight to forsake everything. But now we're not quite so sure. Jesus is far ahead of us and is beginning to seem different and unfamiliar. In just a moment, Kenneth looks at the puzzle of faith in his reflection on the question, how long?
Hello, everyone. It's really good to be able to start off a new week with you on Times of Refreshing. We'll be doing a short series based on the minor prophet of Habakkuk in the Old Testament. And I've entitled it, How Long? Because that's the opening cry and recurring refrain of the prophet in this book. But isn't it also a familiar cry and refrain for all of us in our experience? Have you ever been in a place or a situation which has become increasingly intolerable, so that inwardly your cry day and night is, How long, O Lord? Have you been through an extended season when nothing much seems to be happening despite your continuing to seek the Lord day after day? Such times are especially difficult to bear because there is no end in view. Now, I'm not prompted to do this and ask the same question, how long, because of the long series of messages that I have to do on this program. I don't have to ask how long because I know exactly how long it's going to take. One full year and 260 messages. And this is now 241. So I have every reason to rejoice and to be immensely grateful. But often, this is not the situation we find ourselves in. There's nothing much in view day after day, and you can't see the end of the tunnel. And that was the burden of the prophet Habakkuk. And I'm sure we will all find much that is helpful from a short study of this book that will speak clearly to us of such times and seasons and how a man and woman of faith should respond. First, let me just make a couple of comments by way of introduction so that we can place the book and Habakkuk in the Bible as well as in Bible history. Habakkuk was the last of the so-called 12 minor prophets to the southern kingdom of Judah before it finally fell to Babylonian captivity in 606 BC. In that sense, he was very much like Micah, a fellow minor prophet who was the last prophet to the northern kingdom of Israel prior to their Assyrian captivity in 721 BC. Therefore, Habakkuk lived and prophesied in a momentous time just at the threshold of Judah's final fall into the hands of the Babylonians. Chronologically, it lies between the books of Jeremiah and Lamentations, which is also written by Jeremiah. He would have heard of Jeremiah, even though he might not have known him personally. His prophecy covers the period from 625 BC to 606 BC, and it occurred during the overlapping reigns of the good king Josiah and the evil king Jehoiakim, who followed him. Habakkuk's name means to embrace or to cling to. That aptly reflects his perseverance in holding fast to God and his faith despite the perplexities that he faced during his time. Let's now begin by reading the first four verses of chapter 1. I'll subtitle this, How Long? The Puzzle of Silence. Verse 1 of chapter 1. The burden which the prophet Habakkuk saw. He begins without any introductory remarks or background talk and launches straight into his prophecy as the word of God, which is sometimes described as a burden or an oracle He wasn't apologetic about it, but stamps it with the authority of God right from the word go. So that's how a prophecy is sometimes described, as a burden or an oracle from God. These are not the writings from the private journal or diary of Habakkuk, but it's the word that he heard from God. And therefore, they are as relevant for us today as it was for them in their day. In what follows, we shall trace the movements and the developments of Habakkuk's dialogue with God. We'll try to enter into his struggles and see how he broke through his own limited perspective of his situation to finally see God's longer range and higher order perspective. Verse 2, O Lord, how long shall I cry and you will not hear, even cry out to you, violence, and you will not save? Why do you show me iniquity and cause me to see trouble? For plundering and violence are before me. There is strife and contention arises. Therefore the law is powerless and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous. Therefore perverse judgment proceeds. We find Habakkuk bursting out and beginning without any prelude by directly asking in exasperation what has been weighing heavily on his heart for a long time. It was as if he could no longer hold it in any further, and the dam that has been holding back his frustrations and holding in his patience finally burst, and he let it all spill out before God. He was unashamed and forthright before God. This is the voice of someone who has held in for a long time a heartfelt burden, who could hold back no longer and venting it out before his God. O Lord, how long shall I cry and you will not hear? It was not a flippant complaint. It was a heartfelt burden after a prolonged period of seeking and struggling. He did not doubt God, but he was puzzled as to why God was not doing anything about the deplorable state of Judah, which he felt so indignant about. He saw sin and iniquity and trouble all around him, plundering and violence, strife and contention. He saw the law powerless, with injustice all around, and the wicked surrounding the righteous, leading to perverse judgment. What a sad and deplorable state of moral declension. He had experienced the good times of Reformation under King Josiah's reign, but now the tide is once more quickly turning back in King Jehoiakim's wicked reign. This great declension in both the moral and spiritual climate deeply affected this man of faith, but he did not allow himself to be pressed into hopeless resignation. He was moved with holy indignation. The question for us, beloved, is, can I be similarly moved by the spiritual conditions around me so as to pray for God's arm to move? Or do I get used to it and accept the prevailing perversity as the new normal? Only a soul who is set on God will be sensitive to surrounding sin and seek God earnestly to do something about it. In a wider sense, this is an experience that is common for many. We come up against the apparent indifference and silence of God with regard to our prayers, and we find ourselves in the same position as Habakkuk was. We get restless and impatient. We begin to wonder why or if God has heard us at all. But God's silence is a very powerful revelation of our true motivations. I either quit praying and go back to business as usual and forget all about it and put it out of my mind's radar screen, or I keep going back to God with a little less of me each time so that I can see a little bit more of Him and His sovereign rule over the whole situation. God's silences can help put the focus back sharply on God Himself, and not just my prayers or my burdens. Sometimes a delay is not necessarily a test of faith. It could simply be part of the solution. In that case, it is not just a preparation or a test, but it's actually the way to strip us from the strivings of self. It helps to bring us to a fuller reliance on God. There can be a wrong spirit of demanding or expecting an answer from God as a right, and that can get in the way of God working freely and fully. God will not work just because I'm carrying the burden and whining about His slowness. His silences bring us away from our way of seeing things and doing things to His higher ways. It stands to reason that only then are we truly fit to be His instruments to carry out His will and His purposes. So that's the big message of the first four verses of chapter 1. How long the puzzle of silence? Now let's take the rest of chapter 1 from verse 5 through to verse 17. And let's call this, how can the puzzle of sovereignty? The main struggle of the prophet here is, how can it be when God gives him his answer or reply? He could not quite fathom or rationalize why or how God would choose to work in such a way. Well, let's read God's reply to his question of exasperation in verse 5. Look among the nations and watch, be utterly astounded, for I will work a work in your days which you would not believe, though it were told you. For indeed I am raising up the Chaldeans, or the Babylonians, a bitter and hasty nation, which marches through the breadth of the earth, to possess dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity proceed from themselves. Their horses also are swifter than leopards and more fierce than evening wolves. Their chargers charge ahead. Their cavalry comes from afar. They fly as the eagle that hastens to eat. They all come for violence. Their faces are set like the east wind. They gather captives like sand. They scoff at kings, and princes are scorned by them. They deride every stronghold, for they heap up earthen mounds and seize it. Then his mind changes and he transgresses. He commits offense, ascribing this power to his God. That's a long but very strange answer from the Lord. He's telling Habakkuk what he will do, and he will work a work in his days which he would not believe though it were told to him. It will be with astonishment and amazement. And then God went on to describe in some detail how he would use Babylon as his instrument of judgment for Judah. So here was the Lord's answer to Habakkuk's question. But instead of answering his frustration and exasperation, it added more questions. It added to the perplexity instead of alleviating it. He just could not understand the seeming contradiction for God to use an even more wicked instrument to judge an already wicked Judah. That really seemed like adding salt to the wound. This in turn led to the prophet Habakkuk asking a second question. Verse 12 of chapter 1. Are you not from everlasting? O Lord, my God, my Holy One, we shall not die, O Lord. You have appointed them for judgment. O rock, you have marked them for correction. You are of purer eyes than to behold evil, and cannot look on wickedness. Why do you look on those who deal treacherously, and hold your tongue when the wicked devours a person more righteous than he? Why do you make men like fish of the sea, like creeping things that have no ruler over them? They take up all of them with a hook. They catch them in their net and gather them in their dragnet. Therefore, they rejoice and are glad. Therefore, they sacrifice to the net and burn incense to their dragnet, because by them their share is sumptuous and their food plentiful. Shall they therefore empty their net and continue to slay nations without pity? God's long answer prompted an even longer reasoning from Habakkuk. You could say he reasoned out his perception of God's unreasonableness of his intended actions. He first appealed to the character of God that he knew. You are of purer eyes than to behold evil and cannot look on wickedness. So why do you look on those who deal treacherously and hold your tongue? Or in other words, why are you silent when the wicked devours a person more righteous than he? If God is pure and righteous, if he hates evil and cannot look on wickedness, how can he then employ a nation more wicked than themselves to judge and to punish them? I want you to notice that Habakkuk asked why three times in this whole first chapter. First in verse 3, why do you show me iniquity and cause me to see trouble? And then in verse 13, why do you look on those who deal treacherously and hold your tongue? Verse 14, why do you make men like fish of the sea, like creeping things that have no ruler over them? As if to suggest that there is no order and that God seems to be leaving his creatures to their own devices. But it could be better to face such questions honestly before God than to try to deny or repress them, because it will not make us any more spiritual if we do that. But the thing to do is to bring them to God, not to justify ourselves or to present our rationalizations, but as in a dialogue to present our arguments with an honest and earnest desire to hear what God has to say about them, seeking to understand God's answers and his reasoning. In other words, seeking to know the mind of God. When we ask like that, God is not put off, but he's more than happy to provide us with the needed answers and explanations. This pattern of asking and reasoning is something that we often find ourselves doing. Like Habakkuk, we first begin with a question in verse 2, how long? And then we proceed to the next question, how can? How can this be? How can you do that? That's what we ask when we find it hard to accept his ways. But the way we move forward by faith is to bring them to God. For Habakkuk, or for any righteous person for that matter, a good outcome would be to have a revival or reformation, such as that which happened under the reign of King Josiah. Even a judgment by God himself directly would be more acceptable. But to suffer at the hands of a more wicked enemy was hard to swallow. But this is what Paul describes in Romans chapter 11, verse 33, concerning God's ways. How unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. Don't try to find out or to understand first, but rather seek God himself first, and then we shall begin to see things as he sees. Let's make a little start on chapter 2 of Habakkuk. Habakkuk chapter 2, verses 1 to 4, speak to us about the life of faith, which is a most important subject with widespread implications and applications for us even today. Chapter 2, verse 1. I will stand my watch and set myself on the rampart and watch to see what he will say to me and what I will answer when I'm corrected. Having poured out his reasonings and arguments, Habakkuk did the right thing. He knew that this was what he had to do. He had to deliberately set himself up to seek God and his word of wisdom and understanding about this whole situation. He did not just leave it as that. He wasn't satisfied with just venting his own frustrations and exasperations, but he sought to work it out with God. He set himself to watch and to wait for God's word and answer, just like a watchman would do by standing at the rampart of a tower. You know what a watchman does when he's on duty at a watchtower? He does nothing else but scan the horizon for any sign of either a messenger approaching or the enemy approaching. But that's what he does. He does nothing else but gives himself with alert attention to see what's coming up. Do we know how to watch and wait for God like that? Perhaps in your seeking so far, you have been much immersed in your own miseries. Why not go up to God as your high and strong tower of refuge, but also to take your place up there with him on the ramparts of the watchtower, to see what he's doing from that vantage point? This is where you can lift your eyes above the immediate perplexities that surround you and cast your eyes with hope, faith, and eager expectation on the larger and further horizon to see what God is going to do. And may God continue to refresh you through His presence and reach you through His Word.
Sometimes a delay is not a test of faith, but is simply part of the solution. It's not a preparation or a test, but actually the way to strip us from strivings of self, to bring us to a fuller reliance on God. Thank you, Kenneth. This is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. And join us again tomorrow when Kenneth presents part two of How Long. Right now, though, we would love to hear from you, and I have several ways through which you can be in contact. You can send us a text message at 9431-3813, or you can write to us at Post Office Box 392, Thompson Road, Post Office, Singapore 915-714. You can go to our Facebook page and leave your comments there or share some views with some of the other folks you see. Also, I invite you to visit our website, www.timesofrefreshing.asia, where you can listen to the program right online. And Times of Refreshing has launched an iPhone app that allows users to directly access the broadcast messages and the podcasts right from their iPhones. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again for Times of Refreshing.